Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Welcome in. It is the Sports Junkies on a Labor Day. The Junks got the day off today, so Toby Altizer with you till 9 a.m. Got plenty to talk about today. We got a good lineup on the station for you today. I got you till 9 o'clock. Denton Day taking you from 9 to noon. Doc Walker from 12 to 3. The second youngest in charge, Linnell Willingham from 3 to 6. And Pistol Pete Medhurst from 6 to 9 taking it home. So plenty of good stuff coming up on the station today on a Labor Day as the regularly scheduled programming has the day off, but plenty to discuss. It's officially game week for the Commanders. Got to talk about them. We'll dive deep into some different topics about the Commanders today. 7 o'clock, want to talk about what are you most and least confident in going into this season. And then at 8 o'clock, want to talk about what will define a successful season. If this team's able to have a successful season, what is that going to look like? We'll talk about that coming up at 8 o'clock. But let's just start by talking about some of the great things that happened this weekend. We had a full weekend of sports. It's nice because we're coming out of a little bit of a dead period that there always is from, you know, once training camp starts, it's nice, but there's that little dead period in there when you got some baseball, but not tons else going on. College football's officially back. I want to dive into that in just a second, but Scottie Scheffler won the FedEx Cup, $25 million richer. Must be nice to be Scottie Scheffler and the Scheffler fam today. He looked like us for one hole where he shanked one out of the bunker. And I love the answer. I don't know if you saw this, Max. After the round, someone asked him about that. He's like, yeah, I shanked it. And they're like, why'd you shank it? He goes, well, you know, when you've got a club and there's a, you know, the connection on the hosel there, and I hit it down near there versus the actual face, and that's why it went that way. It reminded me, you remember the Torian Prince soundbite from when he was still with Baylor in college, and they asked him, they lost to Yale in the NCAA tournament, and they asked him, you know, Baylor, you're big, you got size, how does Yale out-rebound Baylor? He goes, you see, so when someone shoots the ball, it goes up on the rim, when it comes off, you grab it, that's called a rebound.
I do remember that. That was great.
And he goes, they did more of that than us. You know, as people in the media, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to degrade questions or anything because, you know, that's a difficult job. But at the same point, it is hilarious when an athlete just kind of throws the question back in a media member's face. It's kind of funny sometimes.
Just very point blank, period. Yeah, I like it.
It's pretty funny. The Nationals, they got swept by the Cubs over the weekend. That was not a great showing for the ball club. It was, I think you saw a little bit of the youth from the Nationals over the weekend. There was just some, they come off the high of taking 2 of 3 against the Yankees. And that was an impressive series. That was impressive to see the guys, and I think having Dylan Cruz make his debut and that kind of gave them a little bump in that Yankees series. And I think you saw the youth kind of catch up to them because they weren't sharp against the Cubs. They just weren't. You know, the errors were abundant, and it just was not a good performance. You go 7-6 on Friday, 5-3 on Saturday, yesterday 14-1. Just a disappointing weekend series for the Nationals. And if you haven't had a chance yet, we just dropped a new Bustin' Loose Baseball. Should be hitting your podcast feeds today. Grant Paulson and I talking about the Washington Nationals and breaking down that series. Also, we did a little Fair or Foul with our guy Darris Dameron and kind of set us up for a discussion to talk a little bit about the offseason and going into next year. And let's just say, I'm not going to spoil it, but let's just say I talked myself into a little bit of a depressing state looking ahead at next season. So I won't spoil it too much, but you'll have to check that out, Bustin' Loose Baseball, wherever you get your podcast. But the big story of the weekend was college football. College football was fantastic this weekend. We can start with a game last night. Did you stay up and watch this full thing, Max? Because it was awesome.
Yeah, I got a chance to. I got back from birthday dinner, and so I got a chance to see like the end of the fourth quarter.
It was an awesome game.
It was great.
It was so fun to watch, and I thought it was a unique college football game because usually you think USC, LSU, you think 30 and 40 points each.
Mm-hmm.
You think no defense being played.
Absolutely.
And you think mobile quarterbacks.
Yep.
And you've got none of those things. You got none of them. It was actually a very well-played college football game, which I'm more of an NFL guy than a college football guy. I know some people are more college than NFL. But, you know, this reminded me of just a well-played back in the day, which you'd watch, and it was an SEC NFL-style football game, pro-style football game, where this was pocket passers, this was solid defense, occasional plays, and one or two mistakes is going to cost you the game. And that's what that was last night. That was a heck of a game between USC and LSU.
Yeah, they emulated the Sunday night football aspect of it very well. I was impressed.
Yeah, and it was a lot of fun. It was cool to see these quarterbacks slinging it around. Miller Moss was really good in this game, 27 to 36 for 378 and a touchdown for USC. You know, both of these guys, it was funny because they were drawing parallels all night, and it was so true. Like, these guys, both of these teams were really in the same sort of situation. USC's coming off of losing Caleb Williams, who won the Heisman 2 years ago. They're starting Miller Moss, who started their bowl game and kind of lit it up, and he looked really good. You have, on the other side, obviously Jaden Daniels. Won the Heisman last year. He's now wearing burgundy and gold. He was at the game last night. It was cool to see them hyping him up and so excited to have him back. But in turn, Garrett Nussmeier started the bowl game and lit it up in the bowl game, and he comes in ready to roll, and he looked really good. So it was cool to watch just a good football game, and it was kind of a slugfest defensively. It opened up a little bit offensively in the second half, but at halftime it was just 10-10, all 10 of those points coming in the second quarter for both teams, and it was impressive to watch. You saw USC play some physical defense, which, I mean, heck, the last couple of years we've been so used to them looking like Swiss cheese defensively. And, you know, if this defense would have showed up when Caleb Williams was there, maybe they could have won something. But that was a heck of a performance by USC. That was fun to watch them. And LSU, you know, Garrett Nussmeier, I know Miller Moss wins this game. I might have been more impressed by Nussmeier. That dude didn't seem to miss a throw all night. He was kind of on, for the most part, all game long. And, you know, even his incompletions weren't bad. They were just, you know, barely out of bounds. The receiver wasn't able to get his foot in or whatever the case may be. I was really impressed by Garrett Nussmeier, but it was a heck of a game last night. USC beats LSU 27-20. USC ranked number 23, LSU ranked number 13. The other part about this, too, is I hope that with, you know, I'm still on the fence about this 12-team playoff. I'm still on the fence a little bit about it, but I'm hoping that as we go through this more, you know, 2 and 3 lost teams are going to get into the playoff. Occasionally, like on a regular basis. 2 and 3 lost teams are going to get in. I'm hoping we see more games like this. Now, you know, it's pretty common to get some good kickoff games. Like, we'll talk about Notre Dame and Texas A&M and some of these. You typically get some good week one games. That's part of it. But I'm hoping we see more and more of these. Like, instead of just 1 or 2 or 3, we're seeing, you know, 4, 5, 6 really good top 25 matchup sort of games, I think, or at least spread it out, right? Like, have it so that you've got 1 or 2 or 3 in week one, you've got a bunch in week two, and then kind of leading into conference play, you keep having good games. I think that'd be really nice to have, and obviously as fans of the game, it'd be really good to see. But I wanted to talk a little bit about Virginia Tech. Disappointing loss in their opener. You know, you felt like you had to feel good if you were a Hokies fan going into this season where you're returning so many starters. And that was the big selling point on why so many people felt confident about this Hokies team was they were returning so many players. And so something that just isn't the part of college football anymore is continuity. You know, it used to be that you talked about building a program, and that meant getting a kid as a freshman, maybe redshirting him, and him being there for the long haul, and you're able to build some continuity year after year after year. You're able to put more and more on his plate and kind of grow together as a team. And, you know, it's really cool when you'd see it all culminate when they're, you know, juniors and seniors and they start really winning football games. And, you know, the Hokies have been down for a little bit now, so you're hoping, okay, last year seemed like an encouraging sign in the second half of that season where they got things rolling. And so you're returning a lot of those guys. You get to this year, expectations were really high. They really were. And I know, you know, maybe none of the big names on game day, like Herb Street and some of those other guys were picking VT, but Pat McAfee picked VT to win the ACC. Like, the, you know, and I don't think that was just, like, by accident. Like, I think he truly believed that VT could go on some sort of run, and I think a lot of Tech fans believe that the Hokies could go on some sort of run. Maybe not winning the ACC, but you come out, and when you talk about continuity, where you've got 20 returning starters, that's something that just doesn't happen in college football nowadays. And so, you know, when you get to November, your team will have built some chemistry. When you get to that time of the year, you'll have some of that. This is week one. This is week one. This is the first game of the year. You would think that a team that has that many returning players would have that chemistry and be ready to roll. And plain and simple, they weren't. They just were not. They came out, they were down 17 to nothing, and offensively, they couldn't get much going in the first half. Defensively, it seemed like they couldn't defend the option. Diego Pavia had a fantastic game for Vanderbilt. He was 12 of 16, 190 yards, and two touchdowns through the air, and rushed 26 times for 104 yards and a touchdown. He was fantastic. And it just seemed like it took way too long for the Hokies to get into that game. And for a team that had all that continuity, that it just wasn't good enough. And, you know, to Coach Price's credit after the game, he took a lot of the blame and said it's a lot on him. But even just, like, little errors. Like, you can't have two number zeros on punt return. Like, and that cost you – that literally cost you 3 points because it was a punt. Because of that penalty, they go back into field goal range and they kick a field goal. Heck of a game kicking from their kicker aside from trying to win it at the end of the fourth quarter. But it just was a disappointing performance by the Hokies. And I think there are some things where, you know, they can turn things around. There's no doubt about it. It's the first game of the year. And, you know, they've got a favorable schedule for the most part this season. So they can still go on a good run. And, you know, their season's not over because they lose in week one. So, you know, I want to put that out there. But when you've got the expectations that they had coming in and to play the way that they did against Vanderbilt, it's disappointing. Some of the things I want to see for them going forward, I want to see Kyren Drones play a lot better. He looked a little bit out of sync. I don't know what it was. His numbers overall weren't that bad through the air, 22 of 33, 322, two touchdowns and a pick, and the pick was a tipped-up screen. But even so, there were a couple plays that he could have thrown a pick on as well that Vanderbilt dropped. So, you know, kind of – but it was an uneven performance from him because even some of the throws that were caught were just way behind guys. He just wasn't very sharp in this game. So, you know, if the Hokies want to do anything, as much as we talk about the continuity – Kyren Drones is just going to have to play better, and he's going to have to play much better. And I think that's something, too, that Coach Pry talked about after the game is, like, you just got to go out there and play well, and they did not play well. Vanderbilt did, to their credit. Virginia Tech did not, so they're going to have to turn things around. You'd like to see Bashiel Tootin get the ball a little bit more, too. You know, this is a guy that when they got him the ball in the first half, that's when they found some of their best – action, or in the second half, I think, when they finally got him the ball a little bit more involved, they finally started to see some things happen. But you look back at the box score, he touched the ball 9 times on the ground for 34 yards and a touchdown, and then through the air, he touched the ball 6 times. You'd like to see him get, you know, 15 carries a game. You'd like to see them find a way to get him a little more involved in the offense. So I think there are definitely some growing points for this team. But it's just a disappointing start to the season for the Hokies. On the flip side, another local team, not a disappointing start for Maryland. 50-7 over UConn. The Terps open up a can over in College Park. That was impressive. I didn't get to watch this game as much, but it's funny because, you know, we didn't know who the starting quarterback was going to be until the day of the game, and Billy Edwards went out there and lit it up. 20 of 27, 311, two touchdowns, and Ty Felton was the stud of the day for the Terps. Seven receptions, 178 yards, and two touchdowns, including a 75-yard touchdown grab, which I'm sure you've all seen. That was nuts. That was nuts. He catches the ball at, what, the 30-yard line and makes, like, three guys miss and then goes up the sideline and just outruns everybody. He's a stud.
That's local talent, baby.
Absolute stud.
Local talent out of Ashburn.
It was really cool to see, though. So, credit to the Terps. You know, as much as Tech didn't get it done, the Terps definitely got it done, 50-7. Some of the other notable games this weekend, before we take a look at some. Well, one of the things I love about college football being back, Max, is you can look at, like, box scores and just see absolutely ridiculous stat lines, and we got that. We got that. So we'll get into some of those a little bit here in just a second. But some of the other notable games this weekend, Georgia and Clemson, that was close at halftime. It was 6-0 at halftime, Georgia. And I think Atlanta fans that were at this game at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium were much more thrilled by this 28-3 half than they were other 28-3 halves.
You'd think, yeah, right?
28-3 in the second half for Georgia as they end up winning 34-3 over Clemson. And, you know, Georgia's dominant. Georgia's just so good, and they're going to be good again this year. Carson Beck, 23 of 33, 278 and two touchdowns. I'm interested to see how he continues to grow as a quarterback. He's someone that, you know, we're talking first-round type of talent. So we'll see how he continues to go the rest of the season. It just took them. You know, that's another thing, too, is like this is week one of college football, and you know, the craziness of week one of the NFL is wild, and that's professionals. Imagine when you throw in a bunch of college kids. Of course, there's going to be some variable results, but Georgia finally figured things out in the second half and just demolished Clemson. But I think this more so speaks to Clemson. Like, they've got to figure something out, and I think the thing they got to figure out is Dabo Swinney has to just get up off his high horse.
Yeah, he's got to bite the bullet.
And use the transfer portal. And you don't have to live off the transfer portal. You can still build your program the way that you want to build your program. But if you need to go get a player or two to supplement your roster, go get a player or two. There's no issue there. It's the modern way of college football. Like, if you're not going to adapt, you're going to die. And right now, Clemson is dying.
It's true. Listen, on my college football 25 franchise, no tight ends wanted to show up, so now I got to go to the portal. You just got to bite the bullet sometimes.
That's the thing. You've got to just go out there and use the resources that are there. Everyone else is, and you've got to do a heck of a job recruiting, which I think he's done. You've got to do a heck of a job recruiting and developing the talent, because that's the other thing. You know, if you go out in the transfer portal and you get a guy who's a junior or a senior, they're just going to come in a little bit more ready to contribute, even if they were playing at a lesser school. They've just played more football versus you're going to have to develop freshmen to the point that they're making up for the fact that you're not bringing in extra talent to help out that's a little more ready-made and down the line in their development. So the other point about this, too, is people keep trying to sell Cade Klubnik. I just don't think that's it.
I'm not buying.
I don't think Cade Klubnik is good by any means. So they're going to have to figure something out at quarterback at some point. And, you know, you look back at the run they had at quarterback where they had Taj Boyd, they had Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence. Basically, that's tough to live up to. But Cade Klubnik has not been all he was made up to be for Clemson. But regardless, they're going to have to figure something out there. I think Dabo at some point is going to have to adjust, or Clemson might have to look another direction if he's not willing to at least budge a little bit. Because if they want to stay relevant as a program, they're going the wrong direction for that. They're absolutely going the wrong direction for that. The other notable game, a top 25 game, Notre Dame beat Texas A&M. Number 7 Notre Dame beat number 20 Texas A&M, 23-13. Riley Leonard facing his old college coach, Mike Elko, in his first game at A&M and Riley Leonard's first game at Notre Dame. That was a fun one to watch. Riley Leonard, he didn't have a whole lot going on. And then he found a way to get things going there at the end and won that football game. And I think he's going to be an interesting draft prospect to watch as well. He reminds me a little of another Duke quarterback as he transferred from Duke, and Daniel Jones. Right? Doesn't he remind you a little bit of that?
A little, yeah. A little, just the movement.
A guy that can move a little bit. He's going to primarily work from the pocket. He's, you know, if you put the right system around him and you just allow him to play point guard, very similar to how Tua plays, very similar to how I think Bryce Young needs to play, I think you could do something with Riley Leonard. I mean, I'm intrigued by what they'll be able to do with him, but I think Notre Dame's going to be really good this year because I think Riley Leonard's going to be a big improvement for them over Sam Hartman. Best performances of the week. This is what I was excited about because some of these stat lines are just absurd. We'll start with the less absurd one because this one probably could have been thrown in the game of the week, but it just wasn't close. Cam Ward for Miami was fantastic against the Gators down in the swamp.
He was. It was bad.
Miami won 41-17. Miami ranked number 19 in the nation. Cam Ward, 26-35 for 385 yards, three touchdowns and a pick. Also ran for 33 yards on three attempts. Cam Ward coming over from Wazoo. I think we keep always asking for these different programs, like, are they back? Are they back? Are they back?
We do this every year with the U.
For a year, though, the U might be back. With Cam Ward at quarterback, the U might be back.
Cam Ward looked really good, and the Gators just looked really bad. Napier's got to go, but there's a bunch of internal stuff at Florida that leads me to believe he will stick around pretty much most of the season, even though people will be clamoring for him to be fired because it's going to be a bad year for the Gators. But all credit to Miami. It was a great game. That Cam Ward crushed them.
Yeah, I think the Canes are going to have an awesome season. Doesn't look great for Florida. But let's talk about the crazy performances. So one of these kids, Ashton Genty, I actually got to see him playing. I actually got to see him play in high school. So I got a relative that works at Lone Star High School down in Frisco, Texas.
That's awesome.
And I got to see him play. And he was fantastic in that game. The only reason Lone Star was in that game was because of Ashton Genty. They handed him the ball a bunch, and they didn't have a whole lot going offensively in that high school game. And it's crazy because Boise State needed every bit of what he gave them. Boise State beats Georgia Southern on the road 56-45. Listen to this stat line for Ashton Genty on the ground. 20 rushes, 267 yards, and six touchdowns. It's absurd.
He might be the best running back in the country, man. I don't know. He's
absolutely absurd. 20 for 267 and six touchdowns. I miss some of this because, you know, you talk about playing a college football video game. Sometimes you play these things, you see it, and you're like, this feels unrealistic. And then you watch some of these, and you're like, well, maybe it's not because this is absolutely absurd. 20 for 267 and six touchdowns. And the only guy that might have had a better week one was out in Arizona. Wide receiver Teteroa McMillan. 10 receptions, 304 yards, and four touchdowns in a 61-39 drubbing in New Mexico for number 21 Arizona. 10 receptions, 304 yards, and four touchdowns. It's the first time someone in D1 has gone for 300 yards receiving since Jaxon Smith-Njigba did it in the Rose Bowl for Ohio State, which was fantastic to watch if you remember that game. But, man, I missed some of these standout performances where they throw up literal video game numbers in actual college football games. It's absurd. Ashton Genty, 20 rushes, 267, six touchdowns. Teteroa McMillan, 10 receptions, 304 yards, and four touchdowns. Just absolutely absurd. And you know what? I'm so glad that college football is back, and the best part about it is we got some more college football tonight. We got Boston College and Florida State. And then Thursday, we got the NFL opening up. You got Friday night football in the NFL. You'll have week two of college football on Saturday. The NFL Sunday slate opens up next Sunday, and you got Monday night football. You can't ask for a better week.
Turn it up!
You cannot ask for a better week. And we're going to dive into... Let's take a look at some of these week one games around the National Football League. Coming up at 7 o'clock, we'll get into the Commanders. But let's take a look around the NFL. What are some of the best week one games? We'll break it all down for you next here. It's the Sports Junkies here on 106.7. The Fan, Toby Altizer, in for the guys on Labor Day.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So Sports Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. They got the day off today. Toby Altizer with you till 9 o'clock. Then I'll turn it over to Denton Day. I'm sure he'll be talking plenty of college football as well. So we got you covered there in the first segment, talking plenty of college football. And it's a beautiful time of the year as football is back. Football is back. You got some college football tonight with Florida State and Boston College, and you open up the NFL slate on Thursday night, the opener of the NFL season. You got the Ravens at the Chiefs, and I think that's going to be a fun one to watch because, you know, that playoff game was a heck of a game, and Baltimore should have won that football game. They need to find a way, and that's what I'm interested to see is, like, we've seen Lamar show that he can be an MVP. We've seen Lamar show that he can be one awesome player. But this season for the Ravens, I want to see if Lamar can get to that next level. And to be honest with you, it's one of those tough parts where you almost wish, if you're a Ravens fan, just give me 10, 12 wins, and can we fast forward to the playoffs? Like, can we just fast forward to the stuff that we want to see? Because if you're the Ravens, if Lamar goes out there and has another great season, okay, awesome. You've seen him do that time and time again now. You need to see him win some meaningful playoff games, and it's so tough because you've got so many stud quarterbacks in that AFC. Like, is he ever going to get past Mahomes? Who knows? Is he going to be able to get past Josh Allen and some of these other guys? I'm intrigued because to me, that's the next step. Really, that's all that's left for Lamar. If he can win a Super Bowl, you've cemented your legacy right there. He's got to at least get to one, but if he could win a Super Bowl, that cements his legacy. You've got two, I think, unanimous MVPs. One of the greatest, in my opinion, already the best rushing quarterback, running style quarterback, even though he doesn't get the credit he deserves as a pocket passer. He's the best running quarterback, in my opinion, because of his ability to pass. I would take his thoughts over, or his ability to pass over a lot of the previous guys. So, to me, he's got to win a Super Bowl at some point. Doesn't necessarily have to be this year, but this would be a great opportunity. And then you got the Chiefs. They're looking for a three-peat. What do you think the chances are, Max, that you get a three-peat for the Chiefs?
I don't know. Dude, Taylor Swift is drawing up plays for the Chiefs now, so it could be, it could almost be guaranteed at this point.
Yeah, I feel good about the Chiefs' chances because it didn't seem like they had anything going for them last year, and then they snuck into the playoffs.
Exactly.
And then they found a way, literally found a way, because they didn't have anything going, and all of a sudden, Travis Kelce kind of turned the clock back a little bit. He looked like he was washed in the regular season. He looked much more like the Travis Kelce we were accustomed to seeing in the playoffs. And Rashee Rice started to step up. But aside from that, like, they just had nothing. Well, obviously, Pacheco was big, and their defense was fantastic.
Their defense was really, like, carried them, I think, a lot more than they get credit for.
Oh, 100%.
It was great.
Their defense was unreal last year. And I think they'll take a step back because losing L'Jarius Sneed.
Yeah, it's a big loss.
Big time loss.
Big
when
loss.
You've got Sneed on one side, McDuffie on the other, you know, that is a heck of a secondary. I think they're going to have to try to find a way to replace him, and I just don't know that there is. But offensively, you add some weapons that now you feel like, okay, maybe this can look more like the Chiefs offense that we were accustomed to, where Hollywood Brown's going to be back. He'll miss the opener, but he'll be back at some point this season. So you'll have Hollywood Brown. I wasn't necessarily sold on the Xavier Worthy pick. I know a lot of people are thrilled about that because they just see speed and instantly think, ooh, Tyreek Hill.
Speed don't mean jack when you're 160.
Well, and Tyreek Hill is so unique because he's the one sort of guy that everyone just equates him with the speed guy, and he is. But there's no one that's quite as shifty as Tyreek Hill that is that fast.
Yeah.
He's in and out of his breaks. It's not just straight line speed. It's all over the place. He's like a jitterbug, just all over the place. Like I don't know how you ever cover him. Like as much as I disagree with him being ranked the number one NFL player on the NFL Top 100, I don't know how you stop him. Like you've got to dedicate an entire defense to stopping him, and then you've got Jalen Waddle and guys like that on the other. I have no idea how you stop Tyreek Hill. No idea.
There's a reason they put up 70, man. It's that Dolphins offense is going to be potent this year, I think.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't know that Xavier Worthy steps in immediately and is like, ooh, okay, he's going to be Tyreek Hill. I think we can relax on that. But I think having him on the field, if he's able to create even just a little bit of a role where he is the deep threat, it can give them something that they haven't had since Tyreek Hill, which is someone that you're scared of deep down the field. With MVS, you know, you felt like, at times he could go make a play, but then he would just drop the ball. So I think for them, having a legitimate guy that can be a deep threat will be big. And maybe Hollywood Brown fits in there too. I think Hollywood can stretch the field as well. So it's going to be interesting to see, but I think you could see a Chiefs offense that looks much more like the Chiefs offense we're accustomed to seeing. But that defense is probably going to take a step back. When you take a step back, though, and you're arguably the best in the league, I mean, okay, so you're now just a top eight unit. So I think this Chiefs team, like if I had to pick, I would take the Chiefs right now. I'd feel pretty good about it. And anytime you've got Patrick Mahomes, you feel good about your chances because now this dude is just, he's done, you know, similar to how Brady and Peyton and these guys were just in the playoffs every year that it didn't faze them as much. They'd played full seasons in the playoffs. That's where Patrick Mahomes is getting. Like, you think Patrick Mahomes is going to get all in a tizzy about playing some random playoff game in January? Not anymore. He's gone on the road and won. He's won Super Bowls. He's won at Arrowhead. He's won everywhere. The only dude that's beat him so far is Joe Burrow and Tom Brady. That's it. Joe Burrow and Tom Brady. I don't know. To me, you got to feel good about the Chiefs. The Ravens have a lot of questions. If they can get over the hump, I'm definitely intrigued about them. 800-636-1067. You want to hop in, want to take a look at some of the other top games around the NFL, but let's get out to Kevin, who is in Fairfax. Kevin, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a question. What is your feeling about the Steelers going down to Atlanta? This will be the first time that Arthur Smith returns to his old team. I'm not sure what to think about the Steelers quarterback situation, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on it.
Appreciate the phone call, Kevin. Yeah, I think that's going to be an intriguing game. Obviously, for the Washington angle, it's Kirk Cousins and his first game with the Falcons. But I think the Steelers are an intriguing team because I would have personally gone with Justin Fields. And
absolutely.
I'm not a Fields guy.
I'm a Fields over Russ guy.
And my thing is, with the Steelers, what gives you the highest ceiling?
Because
to me, what's happened a little bit in Pittsburgh is a little bit of complacency.
Mm-hmm.
It's gotten to the point where it used to be only about Super Bowls in Pittsburgh, and now it's about this 500 record thing with Tomlin, it feels like. And do they have a higher floor with Russell Wilson? 100%. I think that Russell Wilson can give you solid quarterback play. I don't think he can give you Super Bowl caliber quarterback play anymore, but I think that he can give you enough that, yeah, if you start Russell Wilson, your chances of going 500 or above and, you know, maybe finding a way into the playoffs are probably slightly better. But sometimes you got to swing big and hope that you can hit a home run, and I think that's Justin Fields. And I think at some point Fields will take over because, you know, I think they're going to need some extra creativity. I think if this were Russell Wilson, you know, and I think this is where we fool ourselves. If this were Russell Wilson 6-7 years ago, then yeah, start Russell Wilson. But when you think about Russell Wilson, you think about his ability to create. He wasn't just your traditional pocket passer even when he was at his peak. You know, I think if they had maybe a Jared Goff type, I could see going with a Jared Goff over a Justin Fields. But when you think of a guy that at his peak was not thought of as your traditional drop back, three step ball out kind of passer, he was really good because he could do some of that. But primarily it was because he could extend the play. He was very smart, never lost yardage, was hardly ever sacked. and threw the ball accurately on the run. Well, Russell Wilson hasn't been that guy in quite some time. And so if you give me a chance to go with Russell Wilson, who's the off-schedule quarterback anyways, primarily, and he doesn't have the same step anymore, or a guy who is one of the best running quarterbacks in the NFL, it's still to be determined if he can pass in the NFL. Well, matter of fact, if we're going off results, he probably can't pass at the NFL level. But you can draw up a dynamic offense, and you think of an Arthur Smith offense, he wants to run the ball anyways. So you can get real interesting with a rushing attack. To me, I would have gone with Fields. I can understand going with Wilson, but I would not be surprised at all if at some point they make that switch to go with Fields. And, you know, I wouldn't also be surprised if they go into Atlanta and win week one either. I think that the Steelers are going to come in and be very Steelers-esque. They're going to go about their business. They're going to do their stuff. I don't know how the Falcons are going to look because we haven't seen them. We haven't seen them. I think they've got a lot of talented players, but to me, they're a lot like, their players are like the Justin Herberts of skill position players. Yeah, you love the talent, but what have they actually done?
Incredible in hypotheticals, yeah.
Right? Like, Bijan Robinson, we'll see how he does in his second season. Drake London, everyone loves him. Kyle Pitts, loved him. What have they actually done? So we'll see. I think Kirk going down there gives them a improved quarterback play. Obviously, I'm intrigued to see how they do. But, yeah, I mean, if I had to pick week one, I probably would go with the Steelers week one going into Atlanta and finding a way to win. I think they're just going to be the steadier team. And if Atlanta gets off to a great start, then maybe they win that football game. But I think the Steelers are probably just going to hover around 500 again. And to me, that's disappointing if you're Pittsburgh, because they've done that for how long now? It's about winning Super Bowls. And I just don't know if Pittsburgh's all about that anymore. And to be fair to them, you know how hard it is to win in the AFC now?
AFC North especially, with Cincinnati and Baltimore on
sure,
both sides of you?
But like, just think about the AFC. Like, you feel good about what they did at quarterback, and you'd feel a lot better if they were in the NFC. Do you feel good with either of those quarterbacks, which I think is an upgrade over what they have with Kenny Pickett?
Absolutely.
And I think it made sense what they did. You feel good about either of those quarterbacks against eight guys
Burrow,
in the AFC?
Allen. Yeah, no. Not even remotely close.
No. And so that's where it's tough. Like, with the AFC, you almost have to go boom or bust, because,
yeah.
And the difficult part is all these guys are young. They're not going anywhere. So you're either going to have to find your guy, or you're going to have to build awesome football teams and defenses that can overcome some of that. Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to dive into some of the other big time week one games. It's the Sports Junkies. Toby Altizer in for the guys here on Labor Day, right here on 106.7 The Fan. Toby Altizer in for the Junks here on Labor Day, taking you up until 9 o'clock. Then we'll turn it over to Denton Day. Right now, we're talking about the NFL. Some intriguing week one games. Ravens-Chiefs kicks it all off on Thursday. Then we got the first ever game in Sao Paulo, Brazil on Friday night. The Packers taking on the Eagles. I mean, some of these early matchups, like Ravens-Chiefs is going to be awesome. Packers-Eagles is going to be fun. Sunday Night Football is Rams-Lions, and Monday night, Jets at Niners. Like, pretty good primetime slate to start the year off.
Yeah, Goodell did a good job on this one. I'm impressed.
Yeah, Packers-Eagles is going to be interesting. I want to see how Jordan Love and the Packers look in this second year. You know, he was awesome at the end of last season. He looked like a guy that, you know, they ended up having to pay. He looked like their next quarterback, but it was half a season. So let's see if they can do it again. And they've got those young playmakers. Let's see if they can continue to do what they were doing at the end of last year. You know, I mean, heck, we were talking about this earlier with Virginia Tech. I know these are pros versus college, but the second half of last year was awesome for Tech. They came out a little flat in week one. Let's see what the Packers look like. And the Eagles, can they figure out some of this dysfunction? Like, you know, you go back to, there was a piece put out on ESPN talking about the dysfunction in Philadelphia. And there was a part in the article basically where saying Jalen Hurts was questioning Sirianni's chops with X's and O's. I don't know how fixable that sort of situation is. I think they can find a way to work together. But when you start questioning your coach's intellectual ability and ability to get things done, you've kind of crossed the line where I don't know that you can go back. So I think this is going to be an intriguing season for Philadelphia because, I mean, last year they started 10-1, and then they just completely imploded, and it literally imploded. It was nothing that other teams were doing. They just completely imploded on themselves, and we'll see if they can figure stuff out. You know, I'm not rooting for them to figure it out.
Hey, see, that's this is why I got the Commanders winning the NFC East, man. I don't believe in the Cowboys. Wow. Eagles are going to implode, and the Giants just flat out stink. So,
all right, well,
up and up.
I'm gonna disagree with you there, but
that's fair. That's fine.
Eagles imploding would be nice to see again. Sunday at 1 o'clock, some notable matchups. Titans at Bears, Caleb Williams debut. I think that's going to be fun to watch. I'm not sold on Will Levis at all, so I don't really care about the Titans. I don't think they're going to be anything. I was not really overly impressed with Will Levis in college, so I think it's going to be something where they'll give him a full year, maybe a year and a half or two, but I think they're going to continue to be in the quarterback market there. But with Caleb Williams, I'm intrigued to see how he looks early on. Is he able to go out there and play on schedule? I think we're going to see the special plays. We already knew that, and we saw some of that in the preseason. But when the play calls for a five-step drop and get the ball out, is he going to be able to do that? So we'll see with that. But I'm intrigued to see how he looks. Texans at Colts, I think, is an intriguing one as well. How do the Texans bounce back after what they did last year? Do they continue to roll with what they were doing? And the Colts, I don't know where this Anthony Richardson love affair came from so many people. The tools are there. That's obvious. Rocket arm, huge, can run. We get all that. Can he actually play football? And can he stay on the football field?
Nobody knows.
And I think this is where it's intriguing. The Texans are now the cream of the crop in that division. If you're the Colts, that's the team you're looking up to. You got to see if you can compete against them, and it's a big opportunity once again for Anthony Richardson to kind of show. I mean, he played well in the games he played last year, but he barely ever finished a game, and then he got hurt. So I don't know what to make of Anthony Richardson, but it's another opportunity for him and another opportunity for the Texans to get off to a good start. Jags at Dolphins. We talked about the Dolphins a little bit earlier. That offense is going to be fun to watch again this year. I'm excited to see what they can do. And Mike McDaniel is one of my favorite coaches to root for. I think he's really creative in what he's able to draw up and get done with those playmakers. And I think they found the perfect mix. There's a couple quarterbacks in the NFL that I think are in the perfect spot. I think there are some that can work wherever, but there's a couple that I think are very specific on what works, but they're perfectly placed where they're at right now. Tua is one of them. Tua in this offense, I think, is a perfect match for what they're able to do, so I'm excited to see how they continue to grow that offense and build off of last year. And then the Jaguars, can they finally get things going? They had to pay Trevor Lawrence. Can Trevor take that next step? They need him to. I don't have an issue paying him. You feel good about the talent. At some point, though, you've got to step up and take that next leap and start elevating the football team, which I don't know that he fully has yet. I think we've seen glimpses, but we need to see it a little more consistently. So that's going to be an intriguing one. And then Sunday at 4 o'clock, obviously Commanders, Buccaneers will all be dialed into that. Broncos at Seahawks will be a fun one. Bo Nix and his first ever game. I'm intrigued. I think, you know, we're talking about perfect fits. I think Bo Nix with Sean Payton's offense is perfect. I think he's going to be really good in that offense because, to me, he can do a lot of what Drew Brees was doing at the end of his career with a little upgraded of an arm and mobility. And not to say that he's Drew Brees, because obviously when you get to that point in a career for Drew Brees, a lot of it is cerebral, and it's more so to do with what you're able to do in your head. He doesn't necessarily have that yet, obviously, but I think his physical abilities will allow Sean Payton to kind of be an extension out there on the field of playing quarterback with Bo Nix. So I think the Broncos got a perfect fit there. Seahawks first game for Mike McDonald. And then Cowboys-Browns. How do the Cowboys look after an offseason with some craziness and all the drama that's around them with CD and then Dak and then Parsons and all that craziness? How do they look against a really good Browns defense? How do they look early on against the Browns? And the Browns have questions themselves about quarterback specifically. Like, is Deshaun going to ever look like Deshaun Watson we saw in red, white, and blue down in Houston? We'll see. But do the Cowboys come out and play well and show that, okay, maybe they're for real? Or do they kind of come out and lay an egg? And then Sunday Night Football is going to be fun. Rams at Lions. Stafford going back to Detroit once again. That'll be a fun one to watch. I think both of those are contenders in the NFC. The Lions, obviously, one of the top contenders. I think the Rams slept on a little bit. I'm intrigued to see how they're able to fill in for Aaron Donald leaving. But getting both of those Florida State guys in Fisk and Jared Verse, I think they're going to be able to find a way to make that defense good as well. And then Monday night, Jets at 49ers. The Jets, obviously, Aaron Rodgers, that's going to be the big story for them. And I think they've got a heck of a roster. If Aaron Rodgers were healthy last year, I think they could have been in a good spot to compete in that AFC. We'll see if they're able to get a healthy Aaron Rodgers back that can play at a good level, because he doesn't even have to play at an MVP level like he had for a couple of years down the stretch there in Green Bay. He can play just a solid level. They've got a heck of a defense there. So we'll see how the Jets do in the Niners. Is Trent going to show up? You know, like all this craziness with the Niners, they're supposed to be the top team in the NFC. They've got probably the most drama, which is crazy to think about with all the stuff that was going on with the Cowboys and Jerry Jones saying crazy stuff. The Niners had the most drama this offseason. Ayuk's been settled. What's going to happen with Trent? Are they going to be able to come out clicking right away? So I think that's going to be a fun one to watch as well. But the game that we all care about is Commanders at Buccaneers, and we got to talk about the Commanders because it's finally game week. So let's dive into that coming up in just a couple of minutes. What are you most confident in, and what are you least confident in for the Commanders this year? 800-636-1067. You want to hop in on the MGM National Harbor listener lines, or you can tweet at me at Toby_Altizer. We'll dive into it next here on the Sports Junkies on 106.7 The Fan.